What? This crowd seems a little rowdy this morning, a little restless. People are all fired up for the bond sale. Or maybe we had too many cups of coffee this morning. But good morning, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to the Board of Public Works. It's always great to be able to join my colleagues here in their home turf here in the Lewis Goldstein building. May the good Lord bless you all real good. We're here today for our annual bond sale. And I know the treasurer and her team have been working hard. Last week, all three rating agencies once again reaffirmed Maryland's AAA bond rating. And as you may know, Maryland is one of only 12 states in America to receive this coveted ranking. Our AAA bond rating, I think, is a result of all of us coming together, working together in a bipartisan manner to act as prudent stewards of the taxpayers' money. All three rating agencies noted our state's sound budget policy, strong financial controls, and prudent debt management. And I want to especially applaud my colleagues, Treasurer Kopp and Comptroller Franchot, and for their tremendous work, and thank them for their collaboration with our team, especially Budget Secretary David Brinkley and his team. There's no question in my mind we could not receive this AAA bond rating without all of us working together. So please give all of them a big round of applause. And lastly, I want to applaud Treasurer Kopp on this particular bond sale. It's a pretty smart strategic move, I hope. Her team split the sale into two series, which we are hoping will enhance the competition, which we believe may help us get the best value for the state. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleagues for any opening remarks. Madam Treasurer.
Thank you, Governor. I just want to extend what you said to our staff. You're going to see the Treasurer's Office staff coming in and out in a few minutes, as you know, as we go through this bond sale. And they are the ones working with our advisors who decided to take a slightly new track with this sale, and we'll see how it works out. But also the combined work of that staff with yours, with the treasurers, as you know, everything's built on the debt affordability model, which is a joint endeavor. Revenue projections, a joint endeavor, this is the Maryland way. We'll have a couple more remarks when we get to the sale itself, which I trust will go very smoothly and well. But you never know. You always sit here with your fingers crossed.
Or what if nobody bids?
Well, that's the thing. But it's a great investment, as you know. There are few things that are more solid investment than Maryland bonds. And not only are they great investments for the people who buy them, but the taxpayers really count on them to build schools, roads, alas, prisons, and all the other facilities that we need, and to do it at a lower price because of the AAA's bond rating. So at about 10:30, we're going to start on the first sale, take a little break, come back for the second at 11, and go into that. I'd only like to point out there are a couple of items here that I think show ongoing work, and I'm not going to ask a lot of questions about them right now, but again, strides that we're taking in land management and preservation that I think are important. A subject that I got into at the last meeting, but I will only ask the secretary if we could meet. It includes both MDOT and TVM, and this question of how we grow our electric fleet, how we grow the most energy efficient, least polluting fleet in the nation. It clearly is our intent. It's clearly the state's policy. It's clearly the Climate Change Commission's goal and assumption we're doing that. And let's see how we can actually do it even faster. And one more personal note, welcome back, Mr. Secretary. Hope you had a great stay.
In
yes, your Scottish tie from the Scottish wedding.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Mr. Comptroller.
Yes, thank you very much. And I agree completely with Governor Hogan and Treasurer Kopp on the significance of the AAA bond rating. It symbolizes the fiscal responsibility of the leaders of the state. I'd also like to give a shout out to the legislature because they're very involved with us. The treasurer and I and the budget secretary spend hours before each bond rating is given with those agencies on the phone up in New York. And I appreciate the collaborative efforts of everybody. Particularly our staff who have to sit there for hours. Some of us get to come in and out of the meetings. But it's a long, detailed process to get a AAA bond rating. I do think from the last 12 years, I've noticed on these annual conversations that the rating agencies in New York really appreciate the Board of Public Works because of the ability of the board when the legislature is not in session to make real-time cuts in the operating capital budget of the state. So that, not that we want to exercise that a lot, but I think that is the secret handshake that a lot of us have, I think, over the phone with the rating agencies. And they know it. It's not very well known out there in the public that we have that kind of far-reaching authority. But hats off to the our predecessors 100 years ago who set the system up. I would like to just indicate to families and, frankly, everybody that the state is gearing up for the not only the upcoming school year, but just plain flat out, let's give our citizens a tax break. It's called the Shop Maryland Tax-Free Week, which runs from Sunday, August 12th until Saturday, August 18th. During Shop Maryland Tax-Free Week, parents will be able to shop for their children's back-to-school needs without breaking the bank. No sales tax will be applied to individual clothing items and shoes valued up to $100, and the first $40 of a backpack is now tax exempt. It isn't just families that benefit from Shop Maryland Tax-Free Week. Every single shop, large or small, on Main Street, all of these wonderful family-owned businesses, from Cumberland to Salisbury, will see a well-deserved increase in profits from tax-free shopping. These small businesses are the fiscal heartbeat of Maryland, driving our economy, employing local residents, pouring monies right back into the neighborhoods they serve. And I emphasize that for those of us that do not have children that are going back to school, it's a great time for us to go shop. So in Baltimore City yesterday, I bought a backpack for myself, the first $40 of which is tax-free. I encourage everybody because regardless of who you're buying it for, every item of clothing and shoe wear and now backpacks, thanks to the legislature, are exempt from 6% sales tax. Does the state take a big hit in the loss of sales tax revenue? Yeah, we do. But guess what? It's made up in the same time frame by additional shopping, impulse shopping for people that are out of the stores looking for tax-free items, and they see items they like and want to buy and are not tax-free. So the state does just well, just fine, and sometimes the government says that we do that more during the year, but there is a limit to these tax-free opportunities. But it's great. Please publicize to your networks August 12th to August 18th. And also, if you can, there's a scholarship going on, the Maryland Retailers Association. They're giving out a $2,500 scholarship and a $1,000 scholarship. All you have to do is go out and shop and buy a tax-free item and send in a photo of you with the caption. That's the entire scholarship application, interview, and essay that you have to write. And it's very simple, and two kids will get a couple of well-deserved scholarships. So thanks to the Maryland Retailers Association for funding that. And Governor, thank you. I know I often miss you when I'm out shopping because, you know, someone has to buy something when you go in and do these press events. it's helpful to have, particularly the First Lady with us. Thank you. It's a great time of year, and I'm delighted that everybody. It also is in the dog days of August. It makes this week, August 12th and August 18th, the third busiest shopping week of the year.
Terrific. I'm ready to go shopping. Well, thank you, Mr. Comptroller. We're going to get started with the Secretary's agenda. Just remind you again, as the Treasurer said, we're going to be interrupting the meeting at 10:30 and 11 to do some really important on-sale business.
Thank you, Governor. Good morning. Good morning, Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 17 items on the Secretary's agenda. We have one report of an emergency procurement. Item 17 is the bond sale item, so that will be held until the Treasurer directs when that comes up, and we're ready for questions on the rest of our agenda.
Any questions on the Secretary's agenda?
I have a question on item 9.
Item 9.
Is that the Maryland Department of the Environment, the Northeast River Advanced Wastewater Treatment Plant, is Zuhl here, or I do know she is here.
That's okay.
She's across the hall. I do know.
Well, that's fine. I have no objections to the item, but I would like to take a minute, if I could, and discuss a critical issue that's under the purview of the Department of the Environment. Among this board's responsibilities is a priority for us to be the environmental steward of our state's natural resources. Every meeting we have requests for wetlands licenses, acquisitions of land for program open space funding, preserving ecologically sensitive lands in Maryland from development, and protecting our wetlands from inappropriate development, all in an effort to preserve our natural resources for future generations of Marylanders. Without question, the Chesapeake is our state's most precious natural resource, one of the most significant ecological bodies in the entire nation, and indeed our planet. While every single Marylander is impacted in some way by the health of our bay, communities located along the Chesapeake are especially impacted. The bay plays a pivotal role in our economic strength, not just our environmental health, our economic strength, our quality of life, health and well-being of our citizens. Last week's heavy rainfall, which led to historic water flows at the Conowingo Dam, was yet another reminder of the new normal we're facing. With the dam, with alarming, unacceptable levels of pollution and grave environmental hazards threatening the Chesapeake Bay. That's the new normal. You know, 1 week of rain tore away 5 years of progress on the bay. It's an absolute disgrace, frankly, Governor Hogan and Treasurer Cobb. I say this on behalf of all of us. I'm sad to see that the good work that your administration is doing each and every day to improve the health of the Chesapeake Bay is being undermined by forces that are beyond our control. The impact of last week's rainfall can be seen on the shores and tributaries of communities along the Chesapeake. Piles of trash and debris that have flowed downstream from Pennsylvania and New York, creating a safety hazard for our watermen who depend on the bay for their livelihood, as well as the ships that are bound for the Port of Baltimore. To be blunt, we're literally drowning in Pennsylvania's trash. And I have a huge problem with that. I mean, imagine if I threw my trash can in my neighbor's yard. Nobody's happy with that. Every state in the Chesapeake Bay Watershed Compact needs to start acting like a good neighbor and hold up its end of the bargain. Maryland can't simply do it all alone. We're taking tremendous steps in Maryland, especially under this administration, to protect our bay and its precious wildlife. But other states have neglected to do so, thanks to powerful special interests that stand in the way of progress in environmental protection. I'm not talking about agricultural runoff in Pennsylvania. I'm talking about land use regulation or lack of it in Pennsylvania. And talking about just river erosion that occurs up in that state. And they're way behind what we've done in this state, and they need to catch up. And by the way, what about the EPA? Could we, someone perhaps, wake the EPA up in Washington and ask them to do their job? And not to get personal, but I have a lot of respect for Congressman Andy Harris. Wake up. This is your bed in your district. Get action-oriented. So it has to end. Leaders in the other states must recognize the tremendous harm they're doing. Delaware and Virginia obviously are victims like we are. Not as big victims, but they are victims also. So everybody needs to get together and decide what we're going to do collectively to correct this situation, because who in God's name wants to bring their family to the our wonderful tourist facilities when they see pictures of what we have now in the bag? And who wants to eat seafood? And so I just think it's something that we need to raise our voices on, bring people together, get people working together, understand what we have to do. If we have to start dredging, great. It's expensive. Every time I turn around, Congress is spending $100 billion on something. How about giving the Chesapeake Bay a small percentage of that so we can start dredging and get some progress made? And maybe there's things that Pennsylvania can do that we can help them with as far as land use regulations. But Governor, I applaud your, as I say, your leadership on all of this. And I'm not suggesting, and Treasurer Kopp has been a super advocate for the environment, but this is a environmental and economic emergency. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Comptroller. I could not agree with you more. It is an economic and ecological crisis that we've got going on currently in the Bay. This is an issue that I have been leading the fight on and banging the drum about this potential threat from the Susquehanna River and the Chesapeake Bay for more than 5 years, since long before I became governor. I can tell you for quite a while the Clean Chesapeake Coalition and I were the only ones that were talking about this issue. Chesapeake Bay Foundation said there was no problem with Susquehanna, that we should stop focusing on the Conowingo Dam, that it was a red herring. I was just excoriated by the Baltimore Sun, who also said we should be focusing on chicken farmers and not on Susquehanna. And now I think 5 years later, everyone knows that we were right. We've been focused on this like a laser beam. Now other people are finally getting involved in this issue 5 years later. But during a major storm event like this, up to 80% of all the debris, the sediment, the phosphorus, and the nitrogen in the bay comes down over the Conowingo Dam from the Susquehanna River. And we've been fighting to do something about this, pushing back with our upstream states. I can tell you that we've invested $4 billion into cleaning up the bay. That's twice as much as the previous administration did in 8 years. It's more than any other governor in history. We've made more progress. The bay is the cleanest it's been in 33 years. We restored program open space, fully funded for the first time ever. We restored the billions of dollars that were drained and robbed from the Chesapeake and Coastal Bays Restoration Fund and from the Chesapeake Bay Trust. And we fought successfully to get the federal funds restored to clean up the Chesapeake Bay. But this problem of the upstream flooding is one that we have not yet solved and we're going to continue to focus on. The Chesapeake Bay is our most precious asset. It's a national treasure. And keeping our waterways clean and safe is a top priority of this administration. I can tell you that with the immediate problem, DNR and their team and MDE and MEMA is working together, coordinating the response to this with all of our local governments and all of our state agencies to try to immediately take care of this problem of the debris and the logs and the tires floating all over the place. And then as the floodwaters recede, we're going to have to make it more clear than ever. It's a perfect example of what we've been talking about for 5 years, that the upstream states, Pennsylvania and New York, need to step up and take responsibility for their sediment and their debris that is pouring into our bay. We have taken bold, aggressive steps to try to address this problem. And you can look at the pictures from the beaches and the marinas and go walk downtown to Eagle Alley, the Annapolis Harbor, and see the damage. We put strong requirements on water quality certification. The Maryland Department of the Environment issue with our battle with Exelon, the owner of the dam, in April. And unfortunately, Exelon is now challenging us in court on these common sense measures to address this exact problem. We've called on the Environmental Protection Agency to enforce its rules and to crack down on the upstream polluters because we have not been satisfied with the response from the EPA. We're moving forward with our own plans to reduce the amount of sediment in the bay. Finally, after people talking about it for 30 or 40 years, we've got a pilot project through MES where we're going to start dredging to see what can be done to fix that problem, but it's going to take help. We can't do it alone. We need Exelon, the upstream states, and the EPA to be part of the solution. Many of our efforts to protect the bay and safeguard our environment for future generations could be wiped out with the effects of this problem. And when it comes to protecting and enhancing the health of the Chesapeake Bay, Maryland has done more than any other state. And we've our administration has done twice as much as any other administration in Maryland history. But we shouldn't have to do it alone. And next week, I'm the chairman of the six-state Chesapeake Bay Regional Commission. Next week, we have a meeting with all the governors and with the EPA administrator. And I can assure you that they will leave that meeting with a crystal clear understanding of their role and their responsibilities in addressing this issue. Thank you. I forgot where we were in the agenda. We're on the secretary's agenda. Any other issues or questions?
Item two. Let me just chime in. I know our former senior senator, Barbara Mikulski, used to say, everything has been said, but not everyone has said it yet. I couldn't agree more. I think Maryland has been the leader, and to see our work imperiled by inadequate responses from neighboring states, particularly Pennsylvania, I think is a terrible thing. And then we're there with you, and I know the legislature is also. This is something, since going back to Harry Hughes, Louis Goldstein, the focus on the bay is ours.
Speaking of Harry, I met with him last week, and he's doing very well.
Really?
You know, he had some health concerns recently, yeah, but he looked terrific, and he was in good shape.
That's terrific.
Great governor.
We're going to have to stop in just a minute or two, but before we let me just is Secretary Holt is
how's let me see here? Secretary Holt.
Well, I just if the secretary were here, I would ask him who is in charge in his office of some of these programs items that he's brought before us, particularly in apartment in helping.
Hey, anybody from housing
multi-use here? Apartments.
I
just think you all are doing really great things.
Well, and that's good, John.
I'm very impressed by this project.
Well, in that case, I really am the one running the. I really should be happy to answer your question.
Items 4, 5. This is what we should be doing, and I thank the department for.
They're doing a terrific job.
Yeah.
I think that was it. She was just going to tell you guys you're doing a great job.
Keep it up.
I
and
second that.
Here.
I think 3-0.
Yeah.
Give a shout out to you and Secretary Holt and your whole team.
I'll let the secretary know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Move approval. Second.
3-0.
On the secretary's agenda. Now we're going to move on to DNR real property. Absolutely.
And
this is spanking money. We can't. We gotta get this moving.
You want to talk about this move?
About the market. Yeah. So we're going to sell $510 million in tax exempt general obligation bonds today. We're doing it a little differently by selling into two bidding groups. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in just a moment. Just a quick heads up, the market had some weird stuff happen overnight this morning, so it's off a couple of basis points compared to where it was yesterday, but we should still have a very successful sale. So we are selling the spots in two different bidding groups. The short explanation for why we're doing that is that we think it will improve our pricing. So I'll explain just real quickly why that is. So anytime we have a sale, we evaluate the pricing of our bonds after the sale, using a metric called the spread to MMD. So MMD is just a market index that sort of says what a bond should price at. for a generic AAA credit. So after the sale, we compare what we really received on the sale to MMD, and we can say, okay, our bonds were a basis point or two above MMD. That's pretty good. So it's just a little metric to let us see how we did. So historically, our bonds have traded right at MMD, or within just one or two basis points. But more recently, they started trading at like 5 to 7 over MMD. So we wanted to sort of understand why that was and if there's anything we can do to improve it. We spoke to our financial advisor, Craig, and one of the recommendations they made is that we split our sales into these two smaller chunks. So by selling in smaller chunks, we think we can improve the competition in a couple of ways. One, smaller firms can bid. So firm that can't afford to bid on $500 million, maybe they can afford to bid on a $250 million issue. We did pick up one bidder, Jefferies, actually, who hasn't bid in a while, possibly because of the size, so that's good. Second, we also think that we can avoid paying what's called a concession for size. So when we sell our bonds to a big bank like Bank of America, they're not trying to hold the bonds for a long period of time. They want to flip them quickly. And if they think that they are going to have to hold on to any of those bonds, they will actually charge us a couple of basis points because they know they're going to have to carry those for a little bit. So hopefully by having these smaller ones, they can get them sold more quickly and they can make a more aggressive bid. So that's the only reason we're doing that. I do want to note one little quirk of doing it this way. The first bidding group is going to be the bonds that mature in 10 years or less, and the second one is going to be 11 to 15 years. So what that means is that the cost of the first group is going to be much less than the cost of the second group. So when you see it, the first one's cheaper than we usually get, and the later one is more expensive than we usually get. It's expected. Nothing to worry about. Okay, so we should have all our bids here. And we got all 7 bids. Take a look real quick. Looks like Goldman was the high bidder. We'll have to confirm this, of course. So let's take a quick look at this. And okay, looks like it's pretty close to what we were expecting. So we're going to go confirm these, run some numbers. We'll be back at 11 to show everybody the second bidding group and let everybody know how we did.
Are you able to leave the bidder screen up so we can see that again?
Sure. Would you just like...
Yeah, just that for one second. That? Thank you.
Everybody good?
Thank you.
Want to leave this?
Looks okay.
All right, thanks. Be back today.
We're going to move to DNR Real Property Agenda.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning. And thank you for the work that your team is doing out there. I mean, it's with the cleanup and assisting some of the local governments.
Thank you, sir. We've got two large boats that we have 7 items on our Real Property Agenda for your approval this morning. We are pulling items.
Questions on DNR Agenda?
Just wanted to comment that I was in College Park yesterday visiting Duval Park, which program Open Space has given over $1 million to, and it's exactly the kind of citizen-friendly, family-friendly investment that makes a lot of sense, I think, to most Marylanders, because it gives them an opportunity to enjoy the outdoors as well as the ecologically sensitive acquisitions we make. So thank you guys for supporting Duval Field.
Any questions on the DNR agenda? Is that a motion?
Yes, move approved.
Moving up. Next, DBM. Welcome back, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you. Thank you, Governor. Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record,
by the way, Deputy Secretary did a great job while you were gone. We didn't even miss you.
Fantastic. For the record, David Brinkley, the Secretary of the Department of Budget and Management, the Department has submitted 13 items for today's agenda. Items 13S and 12S have been revised. Items 11S, 12S, and 13S mod are supplemental. I am removing item 5S, leaving 12 items for your consideration, and I have people here to address any questions or concerns that you may have.
Questions or concerns on DVM?
Just quickly on item 12. This is a proposed contract of $5.6 million to Leupold Alvarez and Marshall, based in Washington. Obviously, the background shows how important the software is that you are contracting with, Mr. Secretary. And you know, there were five firms that submitted bids, but the incumbents did emerge as the sole proposal that is determined to be reasonably susceptible. Is this yours, Mr. Dembrough?
Yes, Mr. Right. Controller.
Okay, so now I thought it was the Secretary's thing, and now I can get a little bit more excited here because five bids, four of them are, for various reasons, declared unresponsive, and the only remaining bid is the incumbent. Is there some explanation for that situation?
There is indeed. Let me begin by introducing myself. May it please the board, my name is Dana Dembrough, Director of Procurement for the Department of Health. With me is Valerie Roddy. She is the Director of Fiscal Services and Operations. Deputy Secretary Vernon Simons is also here, as well as John Cox, who is the CEO for Alvarez and Marcel. We should offer our commendation to you, Mr. Controller, for lowering the number of single proposals from 82 in 2016 to 38 in 2017, as you have mentioned in prior board meetings. We do our best not to have a single proposal. In this case, indeed, we had five proposals. Three of them were knocked out because of MBE reasons. That shouldn't happen, and I welcome a discussion about that, because there should be legislative changes to the MBE program. I don't want to preempt DBM in this regard, but the statute is very demanding. We can talk about the history of it if you want to, but the fact is when we got five proposals, we had to knock three of them out because of defects in their MBE submissions. That left two, one of which was not reasonably susceptible for award because they were not fully competent or experienced.
Could I just jump in for a second? Because I raised the same question. I had exactly the same question.
You did indeed, Madam Treasurer.
My understanding is there will be a group looking at this. Because I don't get it, whether it's the law has to be changed or the process has to be changed. There's just something wrong when we keep having these groups that don't qualify because of MBE when, as far as I can tell, the rules or understanding are set out at the pre-bid conferences, and yet they come back with proposals that one way or another don't work.
It happens all the time. Indeed, when I'm attending a pre-proposal conference, I usually interrupt the MBE liaison at the end of her presentation, and I say, please pay attention to what she just said. If you submit a deficient MBE submittal as your attachment, if it's deficient for any cause, we can't review your technical proposal. You will be automatically thrown out without an evaluation. I will tell you, this was the subject of an opinion that I wrote when I was on the Board of Contract Appeals. It's been the subject of an opinion that Judge Beam has written more recently. It's an outstanding opinion. It explains exactly the problem, the undue stringency of the current statute. It ties my hands, it ties your hands, and I'm glad that the Lieutenant Governor's Commission was looking at it. I would implore the Board of Public Works to continue to do so.
Yeah, it is obviously where there's smoke, there's fire, and we keep hearing the same problem. And the Lieutenant Governor's chairing two task forces, one to look at MBEs and one to look at the procurement process. Both of them are talking about this issue. Obviously, we all agree on the intent of the MBE, but it's almost having the adverse effect because we're kicking out all these firms that are trying to comply.
That is insightful, Governor, because of the three that were disqualified because of the MBE deficiency, two of them themselves were MBEs. So the MBE laws are throwing out MBEs from being prime contractors. That shouldn't happen. It does not make sense.
Well, we'll have to come up with some recommendations for changing the legislation for January.
I'll be happy to help out with whatever recommendations you solicit.
I understand one of the issues, and I may be wrong in it, is that when you file as an MBE, you file under certain codes for areas in which you have confidence. And if you have competence in an area, but you haven't filed under that right code, you can't be used.
That is correct. The NAIC code, North American Industrial Classification, is very rigid. It's assigned by MDOT. We encourage all firms that are MBEs to get eligible in as many categories as possible. But if we are looking, for example, in this case, we're looking for a fiscal analyst, and they submitted a firm with an NAIC code for business analyst or something of that nature. So they were deemed ineligible to have their proposal examined. The simple solution is to allow a cure. Let us tell the people that have an MBE deficiency, here's your deficiency, you have a week to cure it, and then we'll examine your proposal. But we don't allow that. The law says if it's not perfect when it's submitted, you're out.
And I assume that was to correct other errors that went I mean, we always try to correct the thing that went before, thereby
yes.
opening up new.
It used to be the MBE program was really a wink and a nod, and nobody paid attention to it. Under the Ehrlich administration, the 10-day rule was put into effect so that you had 10 days to identify the MBE in order to go forward with your proposal. Now, the pendulum has just swung so far that if it's not perfect at the time of submission, you're out. We don't even look at the proposal.
So
that's not right.
I've worked with Helga Dembro for 20 years. He's a master craftsman, legislator, and I have complete confidence in your communicating with the legislature, and I think the treasurer obviously would back you up on all that. When I first started serving with Helga Dembro, he didn't have a gray hair in his head.
I've just got a few hairs left. That you're too kind, Mr. Controller. Thank you. I will say I don't want to step on DVM toes. And they run the budget. They need to take the lead. They have taken the lead. But I will offer my support in any way that I am able to do so.
Great. Thank
and
you.
I would hope if you all have a group that is looking at this, that you would bring the representative of the legislature in from the beginning.
Yep.
So it's not something.
And from the department.
Late on, and from the department. Yes.
Please include me, Governor, anytime.
Sure. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there a second? 3-0 on DBM. We're going to move on to the university system. Good morning.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have one item on the agenda.
One item, Mr. Evans?
Only one.
Pretty good. Any questions on the one item? Second. 3-0.
Thank you.
Move on to information technology.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Madam Draper, Mr. Comptroller. I'm Michael Leahy, Secretary of the Department of Information Technology. Today we have five items on the agenda for your consideration. One of them is supplemental, and we do have agency representatives here to answer any questions you may have.
Great. Any questions on do it. Second. 3-0. We're going to move on to the Department of Transportation.
Madam President, Mr. Comptroller, Governor, for the record, my name is Jim Schwartz. I'm Deputy Secretary of Maryland Department of Transportation. The Maryland Department of Transportation is presenting 16 items today. Items 16AE and 16M mod are supplemental, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on transportation?
Now, other than what I would like to follow up this question of the fleet and energy efficiency.
Sure. That'd
be great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Second. 3-0 on transportation. Now we're going to move on to the Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Arlington Churchill, Secretary for the Department of General Services. The department has 21 items on our agenda, including one supplemental. We are withdrawing items 5, 6, 8, and 17. We have agency representation to answer any questions you have today.
My first question for you, Mr. Secretary, is how are the puppies?
The puppies are doing very well, though. Very well. They're growing. Very lovable.
They're big now.
For
those of you who don't know the inside story, we had a bunch of bill signings about puppies and puppy mills and encouraging adoption, and we fell in love with a group of Shih Tzus, a mom and four puppies, that were rescued in Baltimore City. And I ended up adopting the mom and one puppy. Secretary Churchill and his wife adopted one, and her parents adopted one, and my granddaughter. So we adopted the entire family, four puppies and a mom, and we're planning a family reunion. thank you. I'm looking forward. I see the pictures. I'd just like to mention item 20. Columbia downtown arch. We have...
Item 20, Shirley Kennedy is the head of the grants department, and we also have Ivan Kennedy, executive director. Yeah.
I just want to recognize Ian Kennedy and his team. You want to come forward a little bit? We're not going to grill you or anything. I'm here to congratulate you and thank you. His team at the entire group at the Downtown Columbia Arts and Cultural Commission, I just want to call you out for your outstanding job that you've been doing with the Meriwether Post Pavilion. I know that you're known as the man who saved Meriwether. There was a time when there was discussions that Meriwether was not drawing big enough acts and attendance was sinking and it was in danger, really, of being sold for redevelopment. And you organized the Save the Meriwether campaign to make sure that the venue continued to serve as the cultural heart of Columbia. And now, I don't know if you've been there lately, but you need to go. Meriwether Post is consistently ranking as one of the top outdoor concert venues in the nation. And they're bringing in tremendous big-name acts. And I just want to thank you for your efforts and say that we're proud of everything you've done, that you have made Columbia and the state of Maryland a world-class attraction there with Meriwether. So congratulations. Thank you very much. Let's give them a round of applause. Thank you. Anything you want to say to that?
I just want to say, I want to say, one, thank you to everyone with state government who has been so helpful along the way, helping support this project. You guys have been tremendous champions for Meriwether Post Pavilion. It would not be as successful as it is without your support. Also, tons of credit to the operators at the venue. Gene Parker is the general manager of IMA. Brad Canfield, who unfortunately couldn't be here. You know, they're the ones who put on those amazing concerts. And then also to the construction team, David Costello. I think everyone in this room, or probably everyone in this room, knew that we lost the roof over the winter, and in an amazing feat of construction and engineering and ultimately teamwork, we got it rebuilt in time for the first concert on May 4th. And Meriwether we're getting through those renovations. We're getting close to being almost done. And once we do, it really will be the most iconic and special concert venue in the country.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. Congratulations.
Could I just say, I think you see here three people who at various points in their lives grew up around Meriwether Post Pavilion for different types of events. But it's good to know that it will be there now for our children and our grandchildren, too, taking a significant role in their lives as it did in ours. And perhaps they'll even appreciate it more than we might, or at any rate.
I'm just frustrated because they've been keeping me so busy with running the state and campaigning. I haven't gotten out. I missed a bunch of concerts that I wanted to go to.
Lady A and Darius Rucker tomorrow night.
What's that?
Lady A and Darius Rucker tomorrow night.
I'm booked tomorrow night. There's like 10 of them I'm missing, but I think I'm coming to Kenny Chesney, I think.
Awesome. August 22nd.
Yeah. Okay. See you then. Look forward to seeing you.
Thank you
guys also, and particularly David Costello. He says repairs were done in a highly professional, expedited fashion. And just tell folks out there that the check sometimes takes a while to get to you. I'm going to be pretty vigilant and drive this one out personally myself. So thank you for correcting Mother Nature's mistake. And it was really unbelievable that you were able to open on schedule.
Yeah, they definitely had a 48-hour workday mentality, and that's what kind of made it come to fruition. So, Costello Construction, they did a great job. And thank you for your help.
They paid a lot of the costs up front.
Absolutely.
Because speed was of the essence. Yeah. And you guys are terrific, so thank you.
Thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you out there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I guess, any other questions on our...
Could I just thank you, Governor, and Treasurer Kopp for supporting my agency with its satellite offices? Item 11 is the increase in the Greenbelt satellite office. This allows us to be directly responsive and respectful and get results for our taxpayers. At Greenbelt so far this year, where our staff has answered 2,000 phone calls, 3,200 emails, helped more than 11,000 taxpayers, collected more than $5 million in payments, prepared more than 1,000 tax returns. It's one of 12 regional branch offices that we have around the state, and I appreciate the support of both of you in our efforts to keep our first-class taxpayer service alive and well.
Yeah, well, I think it's great that you're able to be out in the community as close to people where they can get the service, and thank you for working so hard on the expansion. Are there any other questions? There's a motion.
Is that a,
you have a stall, I know.
Yeah.
Hey, anybody have anything else they want to talk about? We have 9 minutes of the bond sale. We have ran such an efficient meeting.
Do we
want
to do the approval for DGS, though? Yeah. Okay, was that
3-0
on DGS? I just
We didn't finish. We said there's a motion. It's been seconded, and now it's 3-0 on DGS, which normally would conclude our Board of Public Works meeting, but we're waiting for the bond. So I guess we could take a quick break, you think? Everybody stretch their legs.
We're back in 9 minutes.
You've got to be back in 9 minutes.
Is it 9 minutes?
So we got the second bid, second group of bids in. We got 7 bidders once again. We'll go to the results. We actually already know who won. It was City, and we verified that bid as well. I've got some good news. So even with the market moving away from us a little bit this morning, the take on the first group of bids was better than anticipated. There's a lot that we need to sort of check to tease out exactly what all happened, but we think sort of preliminarily that doing it this way was a success. So we have both winning bids. Everything's been verified, and if you all are ready, you can go ahead and award.
Thank you.
Do you have a script?
Yeah. So, Governor and Comptroller, I move that the board adopt the resolutions before us today concerning the state and local facilities loan of 2018 second series. In particular, I move that the board ratify and approve the preliminary official statement dated July 25th, the summary notices of sale for the 2018 second series bonds published in the bond buyer on July 20th, 2018, and the resolutions adopted by the board on June 20th, 2018 with respect to these bonds. And I would ask for a second and a vote on that motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Secondly, I move that Goldman Sachs and Company, LLC, be declared the successful bidder for bidding group one of the second series tax-exempt bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $275,295,000, subject to resizing as provided in the official notice of sale, with a net premium of $45,155,782.10 and a true interest cost, or TIC, of 2.328107%. And I further move that the first group of the second series bonds be issued in the resized amounts and maturities, and that the interest rates and prices set forth in the successful bid for the bonds, and would ask for a second and a vote on bidding group one of the second series motions.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thirdly, I move that the Citigroup Global Markets Incorporated be declared the successful bidder for bidding group two of the second series tax-exempt bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $234,705,000, subject to resizing as provided in the official notice of sale, with a net premium of $35,231,753.40 and a true interest cost, or TIC, of 3.124675%. And I further move that the second group of the second series bonds be issued in the resized amounts and maturity interest rates and prices set forth in the successful bid for the bonds, and would ask for a second and a vote on bidding group two of the second series motions. There a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Finally, I move that the board authorize and approve the issuance of the final official statement for the bond, and ask for a second and a vote on that motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
unanimous. Thank you. Maryland taxpayers had another successful sale.
Great, thank you. Congratulations to the entire team here, to you, Madam Treasurer, and all of your staff. Let's give them a round of applause.